Hello, everyone, and welcome to Straight Chilling. Each week, we watch and review a horror film for your entertainment. You can send all questions and comments to straightchillingpodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to keep chilling.
Hey everybody, welcome to Straight Chilling. My name's Bob. I'll be your host for the evening. This is episode number 66, recorded Wednesday, June 29th. Tonight, we actually had to change up the movie we were supposed to talk about. Drew called out sick today. It was supposed to be his pick. As mentioned on the previous episode, we were going to be watching Fright Night. Sorry, we're not doing that anymore. We ended up watching Day of the Dead, the 1985 George A. Romero film. So before we get into that, let me go ahead and introduce the rest of the cast. First up, Rickety.
Mm-hmm.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing swell.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Solid Wednesday?
Solid Wednesday. Could have done without the rain.
Yeah.
Drew burning some straight chilling PTO.
Yeah.
Taking a sick day.
I believe this is his last day.
Submit your form, Drew. Submit your form.
That son of a bitch. Next up, Randy.
That's me.
Welcome to the cast.
I kind of regret it now.
I'm not taking it out.
Okay. Need a theme song.
That's fair.
And last but not least, Stains.
Hello.
Welcome to the cast. So, you have another Screaming and Creaming review.
Of course. Screaming and Creaming. We'll have some new pictures up on the Instagram, of course.
Oh, great.
Woo!
That's
what people are here for.
Screaming and Creaming tonight.
Oh, man. Self-serve pictures.
Guys, I'm so excited to see what the new offerings from Dreamette are.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to mention this. I saw on Facebook today regarding the Dreamette. I guess on Foursquare, you can vote for ice cream places. You can rank them. I never use Foursquare. But Dreamette was voted like the best ice cream shop in Florida.
Well,
so local Jacksonville
apparently soft
shop.
Serve isn't all the same. Rickety. Number one. Ooh.
It's what the people want.
It's rigged.
Yep. Tonight, the Screaming and Creaming was the banana split in a cup, which actually provides some good visuals because it's in a clear cup, and it's layered. We've got the vanilla soft serve, some fresh bananas, fresh cut strawberries,
ooh,
fresh pineapple slices. We have some hot fudge. We have some strawberry syrup, walnuts. Very refreshing. It's a very...
That wasn't...
Hearty. What?
The pineapple was like fresh cut.
Well,
no.
Maybe not the pineapple.
Probably.
Fresh cut.
I just kind of
struck
me as odd.
Well, the strawberries and the bananas are fresh cut. I don't know. I can
tell
about the pineapple. There was some pineapple.
I'm a fan of both. Don't get me wrong. I was just, it just struck me as odd.
Fresh cut lid from the can opener.
Pineapple.
Beow, 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 beow.
As a former ice cream personnel,
mm-hmm. I'll check on that.
Yeah, you can double check. I'll submit my birth certificate as well.
Are your pineapple slices freshly cut for your?
You should demand that they be.
Where
no,
do your pineapples come from? Are they free range pineapples? Are they freshly cut here?
Where is
Dream
your
Metal?
Pineapple grove?
Do you fly them in from Hawaii?
Very hearty. Healthy ice cream for tonight.
Pictures will be up on the Instagram if you so choose to view. So let's go ahead and get into what we've been watching this week.
Hey gang, what you been watching?
Rickety, what have you been watching?
I've been watching a new show produced, written, I think directed by... Seth Rogen and his writing partner,
Evan
Goldberg.
Evan, is that it? Yeah.
Goldman,
yeah, Evan Goldberg.
Something like that.
Yeah.
It's called Preacher. It's kind of like a supernatural themed, it's based off a comic book, I think, by it's a branch of DC Comics, but it's a 10 episode run. About halfway through it, it's solid. It's got this really funny, quirky, dark sense of humor. Basic premise is the lead character, Preacher, they call him Preacher because he is a preacher. Jesse Kessler is kind of gets superpowers of sorts bestowed upon him, supernatural powers. He also stumbles upon a vampire, an Irish vampire, who becomes his best friend, which is pretty funny. And then, like, so far, looks like these other supernatural beings, possibly angels, are trying to take whatever he has, put it back in a coffee can.
No.
Like, it's really quirky, kind of like, I don't know. It's like a not shitty supernatural.
I didn't realize that they were involved with that movie, mm-hmm. or that show. I had heard it was coming out. I remember it coming out as a comic book and being a big fucking deal back then. I never read it, though. So that's great.
Yeah,
that's
it's great. All them, man. Apparently they pushed ahead it made. It's great. I totally recommend it thus far. I hope it ends well. I hope they make another season because it's a great, just really different kind of dark comedy / supernatural kind of a deal. It's very well written.
That's a new AMC show, right?
Yep.
Gotta make some more money. I haven't seen that. Can't rely on Walking Dead all the time.
I want to watch it, but my mom, I think she caught the first episode on AMC just kind of on accident, and she was telling me about it, and she's like, I don't really get that show. And I was like, I don't think it's really for you.
No. It's like I said, it has this strange, dark kind of sense of humor to it, but it's also kind of dry. It's not in your face. It's not as in your face comedy as their normal stuff. It's kind of more in between the lines, but it's good. It's layered.
Cool.
So far, I'm enjoying it.
Randy, what have you been watching?
Aside from a really awesome season of Game of Thrones that just ended.
Ooh.
I'm going to sidestep that, though. That's an obvious choice. I just picked up recently from the soon-to-be-defunct Movie Stop a copy of Tales from the Crypt,
ooh.
Which I have never gotten to. I've never seen any of it, really, with the exception of one of the movies, Bordello of Blood, I think. And I really enjoy it a lot. Like, I never had HBO as a kid or anything like that. I didn't have access to this. But it was definitely something I would have been interested in because I was super into, like, basically the kid version, which is Are You Afraid of the Dark? It's 100% the same show, just toned the fuck down. And this is obviously, like, much bigger and gorier and more grotesque and more adult in every way. In fact, I mean, I knew it was on HBO, but I never realized just how, like they didn't pull any punches at all. Like, the gore and everything is all the way there, which I expected, but there's also, like, absolutely the most breasts I've ever seen on camera, like, longevity-wise, in any HBO show. It's wow. Except for maybe Real Sex or something.
Maybe,
but it's
even,
like,
Game of Thrones?
Even Game of Thrones. Ooh. It's a lot. At least the couple episodes that I've seen so far are like, and it's kind of deep in the series, so maybe they amped it up or something. I don't know. But
trying to get,
like,
more viewers.
The tone of it is super fucking cheesy, and like it feels like the same tone as Are You Afraid of the Dark, which I love, but it's just, like, extra fucked up. So I really like it. I'm enjoying it so far.
HBO surely takes advantage of their free reign on the ratings or whatever.
Yeah,
they really max that out.
I didn't realize how early that had kicked in for them. I thought that maybe it would be like, oh, you might see a boob or something here or there. But it was like, I saw there's like 3 or 4 scenes with one actress who's not even a major person in the story. She just bares her breasts. There's one where like literally her like part of the story is one woman has a tattoo of a snake wrapped around her nipple. So you see it like 5 times. It's like, okay, got it.
What I watched a little bit with you. One of the episodes I watched with you was, surprisingly enough, directed by and starred Tom Hanks.
Yeah,
which
well,
was interesting.
I also didn't realize the star power that was behind this thing. Again, it was season 4. Maybe they had picked up enough clout at that point. But I know HBO was like, this is early 90s. HBO was just really picking up steam as like a powerhouse of creation and all that stuff. So I didn't know it had that kind of like leverage at that time. to pull like Tom Hanks out of the woodwork, and you know, a bunch of other people who I'm of course forgetting them now, but there's a lot of like pretty well-known people in that. And fucking Meatloaf was in an episode.
The loaf,
the bat out of hell.
We should post some nostalgic photographs of you dressed as Meatloaf for Halloween.
That would be nostalgic.
That was my favorite.
Try and find some of those and put them up on Instagram, too, because they're pretty great. So, Stains, what have you been watching?
I haven't really been watching a whole lot other than what I've kind of mentioned in the past couple episodes. Still kind of wrapping up Silicon Valley, but I have recently wrapped up playing Super Metroid for the first time ever. Old school Super Nintendo game, and one of the like major classics of the system. I've just never played it before, and having never played it before, it holds up really, really well. Like, I was majorly impressed by the game overall, and really enjoyed playing it. It's got a little bit of kind of like a horror aspect too. It's almost like an Aliens type video game, but it's very claustrophobic and everything, and a great kind of creepy soundtrack, very dark for a Super Nintendo game. So I really enjoyed playing that. Have y'all ever played it before?
I've played one of the later sequels, which was fine.
Yeah.
It reminds, like you said, it is kind of horror-esque, because it always reminded me of Castlevania, just in space.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of how I took it. And maybe I'm pissing off some nerds out there, and I apologize to you sweet, sweet nerds.
I resent that.
But, yeah, that's kind of been my take on it.
Yeah.
I've never played it before.
Yeah, that was fun.
Well. I have been watching The Burbs.
Nice.
Joe Dante film. It's on Netflix now. I think it was recently thrown up there maybe the past week or two. But it's one of those movies that I grew up, my parents had HBO growing up, and it was one of those movies that was kind of always on, and I would see bits and pieces of it. And I think it was on Comedy Central too. But I always saw bits and pieces of it, and recently I was like trying to remember what it was, and I found, you know, a cheap copy of it and rewatched it. And it's, again, it's a Tom Hanks joint. It's got
Carrie Fisher.
Yeah. Princess Leia in it. Some pretty shocking star power. This is after Star Wars. But it's basically, if you haven't seen it, it's, you know, a movie set in the suburbs. It's a cul-de-sac, and this family moves onto the street, this new family, and they're kind of weird, keep to themselves. They only go out at night. Nobody ever really sees them. They don't know how many people are actually in the family. And Tom Hanks is, you know, the main character, and he starts to get a little suspicious of them. And him and his cohorts begin investigating. They sneak into the house when the family goes out for the day. And they start to believe that this new family murdered one of their older neighbors, and it just kind of gets out of control. But it's a dark comedy. It's definitely a lot of fun to watch, and I certainly recommend it. Is this something, did you guys like catch this when you were a kid, or have you guys seen this at all?
I saw a teenager.
Yeah, probably teenager wise. I have like a nostalgic, like, I remember it, but I'm not sure exactly from when.
I really like this movie.
I feel like I've caught bits and pieces of it on Comedy Central at various times, but yeah.
I don't remember the actor's name, but his neighbor...
Corey?
No, not Corey Feldman. Although, that, I forgot he was in that.
The pizza dude.
No, like the big white dude who's like in a bunch of things around the time, but I don't know what happened to him. But anyway, he in that movie cracks me up. He is maybe my favorite part. There's just something about the way... He's like,
he's always eating like his food from the fridge.
He's constantly eating and just being a dick.
Rick Duckerman is his name?
Yeah, is he still acting, or
Rick
is he alive?
Rick Duckerman? I don't know.
Okay, I'll look it up later. But anyway, it's very, very, very humorous to me. He said this one line, he was talking about like them chanting or something. And he was like, pain is good. Satan is our friend.
Satan is our pal.
I can't remember. It was the way he said it more than anything. But yeah, watch the movie. It's worth a watch. It's a good Sunday afternoon sort of deal.
It looks like the most recent thing he was in was 2004. So I guess he's done.
Well, he did a good job. He was also in Groundhog's Day. He was good in that.
Yep. And Die Hard and Die Scary Hard. Movie, apparently.
Yeah, I can't. I was just trying to think the same. I don't remember him Die Hard.
Oh, no. Let me IMDb harder.
Dig
was,
a little
he
deeper.
Was Walt, a city worker.
So
he probably been like an nothing. Extra or something, I guess.
Yeah, probably
I don't remember him
no big
his face
deal.
Showing up.
He's in Spaceballs.
Ooh.
He's got a pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, anyways, that takes care of what we've been watching. So let's go ahead and start talking about Day of the Dead and get into Back of the Box.
What's on the back of the box?
All right. On the back of this very nice collection edition that Bob purchased, Day of the Dead, Blu-ray.
Scream Factory.
Yes. In this, the third film in the continuing saga of the undead from writer-director George A. Romero. A small group of scientists and soldiers have taken refuge in an underground missile silo where they struggle to control the flesh-eating horror that walks the earth above. But will the final battle for the future of the human race be fought among the living, or have they forever unleashed the hunger of the dead?
Bum, bum, bum.
That's very copyrighty.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess so. Straight. Straightforward.
Straight chilling?
Straight chilling.
Anyway, Day of the Dead... Romero's third installment of his zombie movies. Interestingly enough, if you haven't seen all of these movies, it's like each one kind of has its own tone. So I know this one of the original trilogy that he did is sort of the one that's the least talked about. It seems to be the least favorite. But I think it's actually my favorite of the three, which is why I chose it. That's why I wanted to talk about it tonight. But... I know, Andy, you watched this with me before, but as far as like first impressions go, Justin and Ross, like, how did you guys feel about this movie? I know it was your first time watching it.
Yeah, this was my first time, and I wasn't really feeling it very much. Riggedy.
Okay.
That's the kind of incisive commentary you come to Straight Chilling for.
Well, no, I just, you know, I'll save it for the cast, my first impression was eh.
Rickety?
Yeah, same thing. I mean, maybe I kept trying to, you know, be like, well, you know, we kind of come from the Walking Dead, you know, generation, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
We see this crap on cable television just as bad, if not equally bad.
We're like drowning
in terms of
in
like,
it.
Yeah, so, you know, it was zombie porn. Not porn, but
yeah.
You know, it was,
yeah.
Not literal porn.
It was gratuitous zombie killing, and many times that was. I feel like the whole movie was engineered towards watching these assholes get murdered by zombies.
Yeah,
am I right? I mean, they pretty much set up the whole movie. These military people are terrible people.
Racist,
setting
sexist,
up for the satisfying, terrible. You know,
murder
prop zombie kills with pig gut. You know, so. I see why. I definitely get why you like it. It's right up your alley, Bob. Yeah. I totally see that. But yeah,
don't put me in a box.
One of the things
you
that...
built it with all the shitty movies you shoved down my throat.
I'm kidding.
I seem to remember a movie with Charlie Sheen that you made us watch.
Ooh.
That's true.
You seem to be confusing me with my twin brother.
Oh, Godzilla then.
Godzilla was okay.
Yeah, step down.
I won't do it.
Shade been thrown. But this movie is, since you mentioned The Walking Dead, it basically is like the seed from which The Walking Dead grew, because Greg Nicotero, who's like an executive producer on The Walking Dead, he does all the special effects on The Walking Dead, and he directs like the main episodes, the big episodes, like Turning Point episodes. So he is basically The Walking Dead, and this was his first film that he worked on. He's as an actor and as a special effects artist. So from this, he kind of learned everything that he knows from Tom Savini and from Romero, and then bam, Walking Dead is now what it is. So I think it's a fairly influential movie that maybe a lot of people aren't aware of. But I think it's really interesting, and that's kind of why I wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, it really, one of the things that really struck me about it first time seeing it, especially from our generation right now, this is from 1985, and towards the end of the movie, I really felt like, wow, this really feels like just a piece of something, which is something that's happening a lot now in films where everybody's creating their universe films. And so you just have this like one piece. Like I watched now, it's like, wow, this is clearly just like riding on the coattails of something. Like it just feels like almost like an extended episode of like a TV series or, you know, like a mini series or something. I was like, it really, yeah, can't like it doesn't seem to be able to stand well.
It's kinda
on
like
its
a capsule
own.
Episode of something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that was my problem. I was like, wow, that's kind of seems to be what's going on right now.
Like next week, mm-hmm, we'll get a new group of people and a new set of characters,
yeah,
surviving.
Yeah, exactly. In, yeah, a different area or something.
That's
a different
kinda,
type of situation.
That's kind of how like all three of the movies are: Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, and Day of the Dead. They're all sort of like capsule movies, because the first one they're holed up in a farmhouse, the second one they're in a mall, and this one they're in an underground military bunker.
Yeah,
so they all kind of have that feeling to them, but the tone is totally different. The first one's black and white, I think 1968 is when it came out, so it's like super low production value. The acting has a certain cheese to it that's also like very charming for its day and age. And then Dawn of the Dead has this intentional sort of comedic value to it. The practical effects are like getting there, but they're certainly not there yet. And then this one, there's almost no comedy whatsoever, and there's a lot of blood and guts, and like a lot of the characters are assholes, and you kind of can't wait for them to get dispatched. So they all have their own tones, but they fit together well enough as a whole.
Yeah,
I think I agree. It is kind of like they stand alone as episodes. There's no true like character connection, anything like that between them, but I do think it just shows. I think it does a good, the series, that trilogy does a good job of showing like what this would be like from three different like progressive fronts. So yeah, you got, you know, hiding away in a house because you're like basically on the front lines of death. You're gonna like go like you and you're just holding up and dealing with this outbreak. Then in the second one, they're really like trying to survive in some way, and in the third one, they're focusing on how do we fix the problem.
Yeah,
and it's like a military minded or like a, you know, for like thinking about the future. They've adapted somewhat to the world around them. Now let's fix it.
Yeah.
So with that, like that's kind of how I take them. Their tones are radically different, though. The second one is kind of humorous, but it also, mm-hmm, has probably the most like obvious and, you know, talked about commentary, social commentary to it. Yeah. This is the one that I think Day of the Dead, I actually think has maybe the least, at least I don't see a lot of it.
Yeah, there's one thing that I really like about this movie is the humans in it. You kind of watch them devolve as the zombies begin to evolve. So there's sort of some commentary in that, but it's not quite as heavy-handed as, you know, the consumerism aspect of Dawn of the Dead, mm-hmm, or the racial aspects of Night of the Living Dead, even though those apparently were not intentional.
What, really?
Yeah, like in the first movie, Romero just said he casted the best actor who happened to be a black guy.
Oh,
it was not
George
intentional.
Romero's so not racist that he makes us all racist.
Thanks, George. So let's go ahead. I mean, I guess we basically already did this, but as far as recommending this movie before we get into spoiler territory, I mean, I picked it, so I obviously would recommend it. Rickety, would you recommend people give this a shot?
You know, considering I would assume the majority of our audience is horror fans, to those listening, I would recommend it.
Yeah.
It is the established the zombie trope from what I can tell. I mean, it's just the campy zombie kill, slow walking, eat brains kind of, you know, straight down the middle zombie film. Even has the Walking Dead warring parties, good guys, bad guys. It's clearly defined,
yeah,
you know, from go. So, yeah, I would. I mean, it wasn't my cup of tea, but I would recommend it to horror fans for sure.
All right. Randy, would you recommend it?
Yeah, I mean, Russ kind of covered a lot of it. We live in a world where The Walking Dead is one of, if not still, the most watched show on standard cable. I mean, there's no reason that those people shouldn't find enjoyment in this film. now that they're fans of that. You know, this informs all of that. And if it was me, I would recommend taking, you know, a rainy weekend day with a buddy and watching all three of these movies, or, you know, spreading them out over like 3 weeks or something, and just, you know, kind of bolt through them, because I think they are kind of separate pieces to a whole, and I feel like seeing all three of them together it's more impactful that way.
I agree.
Anyway, but yes, it's definitely worth watching. I would at least watch the first two. I would watch it in order, though. It doesn't hinge the story, but I think it shows a nice progression.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my thought.
All right. Yeah. Stains?
And see, that's a little bit of, I guess, my commentary on it. Because, like, as just this film, like, mm-hmm. would I just recommend this film? Not mm-hmm. particularly.
Okay.
Like, especially if it's regarded as, like, the weakest one. Like, and maybe they are all better together as a piece or as a whole type of thing. But as this film, just individually, not particularly. Like, it's the acting's very over animated in my mm-hmm. opinion, and it doesn't really do anything other than just the final scene. It's like a sploosh of final scenes. I mean, of zombie final scenes, which, as we've already pointed out, in this day and age, you see every episode on The Walking Dead. So
true.
This particular movie on its own, separate from the other ones, you know, not as a whole, no.
Okay. Well, that's three recommends and one not. So take that for what you will. But at this point, we're going to get into spoiler territory.
Spoiler warning.
So pretty much we're following a group of people. As the movie opens, they're scouting around in a helicopter trying to find any survivors that they can. This takes place in Florida, which I don't remember if you mentioned on the back of the box. So, Fort Myers. So they land in Fort Myers. They try to find any survivors. They come up nil. Now, so they go back to their military bunker, which is underground somewhere in the Everglades. Mind you, it is a massive underground facility.
Let me repeat what he just said. Underground in the Everglades.
Question mark.
In a deep
it's
cave.
Like miles and miles of caves.
That is not correct for anyone who's ever been to Florida knows anything about Florida.
They solidified the muck around them.
It was perfectly formed like miners' caves, like Northwest miners' caves.
Nope.
Not in Florida, sorry.
We don't even have basements here. Certainly
in
not.
Our
cave
houses
systems.
Still flood.
Yes.
So, as Florida residents, bullshit.
So, really, the Florida aspect only served as the opening scene, and then when they got to the top of the base where you could kind of see some palm trees in the background.
It gets a half star for me alone.
Florida boy.
Bullshit.
They didn't even try. I love it.
I do know.
I can actually explain some of that with some of the trivia I would have saved for later. If you guys are interested.
Yeah,
but
go for it.
Okay, so one thing that might explain that, I don't know that it does, but one thing that might explain it is that the original script for this movie involved being not underground. There was sort of like an underground bunker, not caves, where the military was, and then an above ground electrified fence sort of like research area.
Yeah.
And so that was sort of the dynamic they started with. And I assume they started with Florida and then just, they had already booked it or something when the rewrites happened. They're like, well, fuck it. We gotta go to some caves. I don't know. So, I don't know if that fully explains it or if it was just outright negligence anyway, but either way, that I thought that was pretty interesting.
I heard Romero talk about this movie a little bit, and I know the scope originally was supposed to be much, much bigger. There was going to be like an airboat scene in the Everglades or something crazy. There was supposed to be a lot more outdoors like you were mentioning, but I guess he didn't have the budget to pull that stuff off. It's kind of a meager budget. I think it was like $3 million or something like that. So we ended up cutting a lot of stuff out, which is probably why it seems like it's such a encapsulated movie, but
well, the cave stuff, it does. Well, first of all, it'd be cheap to shoot because you don't have to worry about weather or daylight or whatever, lighting, any of that kind of stuff. And second of all, it gives it this kind of claustrophobic, no escape kind of a feel.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I'm not complaining about the cave aspect, but the fact that it's like clearly 30 feet below, and
supposed
Florida
to be Florida,
yeah.
If they had just said, like, Texas, like, would have
anywhere else.
I would buy California because I don't even know. Sure, I don't know California geo. Yeah. You know,
yeah, I guess that's true.
They've got mountains, so I'm sure they have deep cave systems.
Yeah, why not?
But they had to end on that. Well, when there is an ending shot with some palm trees.
Yeah, they had
Lord
to get
knows
there.
It was necessary. Their end game was already filmed. They just had to get there.
Well, shit, we gotta make it in Florida.
We got
now.
The ending.
We're not gonna fudge the numbers with the helicopters. So.
Actually, at the end, I don't think it was palm trees. It was like weird pines because I was thinking, where the hell are they now? Like
Pittsburgh?
Really?
I'm pretty sure I saw.
I know in Fort the Myers, background they had it was like some weird pines trees. And I was like, what?
But I don't.
Were they not? I really thought that they were palms.
No, they weren't. Yeah, so yeah. It didn't even add to that ass. I think they shot the like opening scene in Florida where there were a lot of palm trees. Yeah,
they definitely filmed the opening scene in Florida.
Yeah, for sure.
The one thing, like the opening in this movie that I really like, before the title card comes up, it kind of zooms in on this zombie's face. And he's got no jaw, and his tongue is kind of hanging out, and then it slowly just falls out of his mouth, and then the title card comes up, which is a really cool effect. But
it's probably my favorite zombie in this film.
Yeah,
I was like, that's really fucking cool. Yeah,
not a Bub fan, are you?
Nope.
I know. Apparently, the reason that zombie doesn't have a jaw is when Savini was like screwing the jaw on with a drill or something like that, and it got caught on some of the latex and ripped the jaw off on accident, and I guess it just looked neat, so they said fuck it.
It did look cool.
Yeah. So like we mentioned earlier, the zombies begin to evolve in this movie, which is something that's introduced by this movie, the third installment in the trilogy. Which I think a lot of us were divided on. Basically, there's a doctor in this underground bunker, and he's doing research on these zombies, trying to figure out a way to make them more humane, make it to where they don't want to kill humans but can actually like work hand-in-hand with humans. And he isolates this one zombie that they start calling Bub. So he's introducing all these things to Bub, like, you know, books, and he puts a Walkman on him and starts playing him music, and eventually he hands him a gun, and you can realize that this particular zombie can slowly start to recall things that he did when he was human, because he can work the gun, and he opens the book, and
he salutes the officers.
Right, yeah, he does.
I like Bub.
Yeah, I think we're definitely divided here.
Oh man, I like Bub.
What? Why?
Yeah.
Why? Like what? Like why?
I like Bub. I'm a little of two minds about it. And part of what informs my enjoyment of him is an entirely separate movie series altogether, which is Chud, which Rob and I have watched. And basically, it's this: Chud the movie is an awesome, a pretty good, like, mid-70s horror movie about nuclear sewer killing animals, like creatures.
Cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers.
Yes, thank you.
Chud.
And the sequel is called Chud 2, Bud the Chud, and it has nothing to do with the first movie. It is clearly an entirely separate script that was written as a parody of this movie that they just renamed and threw the fucking Chud name on in hopes of getting it, you know, better results in the box office. And it's like the most egregious offense or egregious version of that I've ever seen. And it's just like it was a running joke for me and Rob for a long time. And then we watched this movie. It's like, oh shit, that character is direct. Like the whole point of that movie of Bud the Chud is to make fun of Bub the zombie in this movie. And like it was terrible. It was bad. It was a comedy, which is fucking ridiculous. But he was like basically a zombie, and it was a zombie comedy, and it was not funny. It was fucking depressing to see it after a pretty decent, you know, creature movie. And so like watching this movie, I'm like, oh, this is much better version of that. Like like watching Bub in this is like, oh, this is so much better than Bud. Fuck Bud the Chud.
Yeah. And also Daniel Stern did not reprise his role in Bud the Chud.
Egregious. egregious.
I thought the idea of Bub the zombie was like one of the weakest aspects of zombie lore I've ever seen in any
wow.
zombie movie. That was my opinion
why,
of Bub.
Why do you feel that
why?
Way?
Why?
It was... I don't...
Be more constructive.
It was
with
very,
your feedback.
It was very kind of kooky.
True,
kookily done. I guess it's kind of hokey, and the fact at the it gets to a point to where in one of the final scenes he's chasing a guy down with a gun that he shoots several times. At this point, I was like, "What is the point of the zombie aspect?" Even at this point,
right.
Like you've taken that like. Just pure animalistic, you know, nature out of it, and he's shooting him at this point.
Well,
it's
I didn't like the reason why Bub existed. I mean, the quote unquote Frankenstein,
the
scientist,
doctor,
and they're
yeah.
experimenting on zombies. He basically kept him alive to teach him tricks. I mean, he was what trying to domesticate him to
yeah.
win to
yeah.
serve him Pepsi. I mean, like, what's the end game? You know, trying to. Domesticate zombies, A, and B, it was a little too on the nose, like you were saying. Yeah. Like, the whole like, oh, he recognizes a gun, and you know they emptied the bullets. And he pointed at the bad guy
yeah.
and click, like, oh, that's not going to come up later. You know, sure enough, you know.
Well, I know, I think Rob kind of nailed it, though, that was, like, that was sort of, if there is commentary in this movie, and I guess it's accidental if there is.
No, I think this one was intentional.
Okay.
I was talking about Night of the Living Dead.
Well, if there is commentary, then it's, that basically, like, it is these creatures that are killing machines are able to transition, like, the reason that doctor's doing that is bullshit, and he's clearly insane, which we come to find out.
Yeah.
But the fact that he teaches that creature, like, a level of humanity that, like, you would assume is gone in a flesh-eating zombie, and then at the same time, all these people are willing to, like, kill and maim and leave each other behind. Like, that's... I think it's this weird... I think it's basically just making that comparison is all that that's for. And for that purpose, I think it works fine. I like it because of its comparison to Bud, but... I totally get not like it is hokey. Like this whole movie on you can break it apart based on its hokiness, but that's kind of the whole series. These movies kind of all exist almost it's like watching music video world. It's like watching a musical where things aren't really real, but you can kind of glean like something out of it.
It's
you
like
can get the drama of it.
It's like zombie fantasy. Like it's definitely not how you would if you wanted to realistically terrify them
right,
with
yeah.
zombies, you would not make this movie.
No, yeah.
Right. That's it's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. So. I understand. I just didn't it's almost like a pile of doo-doo right in the middle of the zombie lore for me. I was like, oh man, this is some weak sauce right here.
I understand how you would feel that way, but I like it. And I get the cheese. It is cheesy, but I like it because it's like a spin on zombie shit. And God knows we've seen a ton of zombie shit, but it's a spin on it that I'd never really seen before. And whether he does it flawlessly or not, I mean, he doesn't really, but I like the fact that you can see this zombie, like Bub has an opportunity to kill the doctor. And he doesn't take it because he realizes that he's, you know, trying to befriend him and he's teaching him new things. And then later on in the movie, when the doctor eventually winds up murdered and Bub sees his body laying on the ground, he like reacts in a way a human would. Whereas like throughout the rest of this movie, most of the human beings in the underground bunker are just pieces of shit and they treat each other like pieces of shit. So it's an interesting... It's sort of just like saying there isn't really a difference. You know, humans evolved from something, and just like these zombies are eventually going to evolve from something. I don't know. I thought it was an interesting spin on it that I hadn't seen before, even if it is cheesy.
What, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I got the impression that Bub was certainly an outlier. Not of the normal zombie breed. He looked fresher than normal.
Yeah.
He wasn't as decayed. Yeah. Maybe they backed down on the makeup so the actor could... you know, have facial expressions and stuff. They didn't have any, you know, gory jaw-hanging type shit. But I don't know. He seemed like a special case almost. The rest of them, the doctor pretty much killed them all. Yeah. Well, like he pretty much offed every specimen he had except for this guy.
Yeah.
So I think Bub was a unique, smart zombie. The rest of them seem to be flesh-eating animals.
Yeah, yes and no. Yes and no, though, because the reason Bub was succeeding is because the doctor was that's the only person that's making an attempt to do this, misguided or no. He's making an attempt to humanize these non-human things, and he starts succeeding with one of them. Like that, I think that given, like, if everyone in this universe was to do that, maybe you'd get, like, as many remaining humans, you would have just as many, you know, tameable zombies. Not necessarily that justifies anything. It's still a ridiculous idea done by a madman, but the from a storytelling perspective, it serves the purpose that, like Rob was saying, that it sort of shows de-evolution and evolution. Like, we're all capable of a full range of humanity levels, is sort of like the point, I think. And yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I get it. They're Stephen Kinging it.
Yeah.
The humans were the monsters, the zombies were the more human than the humans. You know, I get it, but...
Yeah.
You know, still...
Too cheesy for you.
Still cringeworthy. Yeah.
I get it.
I didn't buy in.
I think Bub was sort of like the first of many to come as far as, you know, zombies like evolving and becoming more human-like, because if... In the movie after this, Land of the Dead, there's like, he kind of fully jumps the shark. I don't imagine you guys would care for it at all, but there's like zombie armies and stuff. So if you didn't like this, you're probably not going to like that.
Dead Snow 2?
Yeah.
I like that.
But that's played for cheese.
I understand.
You know, you can cite Straight Chilling episode 25, whatever.
I have no idea.
I don't know what number.
One of the early ones.
If that was accurate, I was going to give you mad props.
I have no idea.
Should we get into the intricacies of the interpersonal relationships of people?
No.
I don't think it's worth
no,
it.
Let's
do you?
Keep
there's
it,
good guys, and there's racist, sexist military guys.
And there's one hot scientist chick and it gets... We get rapey vibes
and
from all
of them. And there's
right?
one Rasta, or Jamaican.
Who flies the helicopter.
Yeah. The whirly bird. Like, that's, yeah. That was an absurd.
Those are the dynamics.
am I the only one that got the vibe that every guy in this movie wanted to bone this chick?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, even the good whirly bird pilot
was
get some play?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
She was the only female in a group
except for,
of
like there were a few people that were pretty asexual. Like the doctor didn't really give a shit.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't think the guy with the other doctor with the mustache gave a shit. But all of the military, they basically just said, "We're gonna rape you later."
I mean, drinking dude, Jesus Mother Joseph, bro. I think his name was Billy. I got the vibe. He wanted to do her. The whirly bird pilot, of course. Every shitty military person in this movie. I don't know. I got the vibe that everyone wanted to get some play.
Yeah, the pilot definitely did also, because he's like, yeah, you and me, can we go to an island, have some babies? It's like, oh, you're kind of laying it out there.
He was the less, the least.
He took a roundabout human survival approach,
still
said the words.
We must procreate.
He was at least being smooth about
it. Dude, if I was him, I'd be like, yeah, this is the only shot I'll ever have at family or any of that shit. Yeah, I'm taking it. Can't blame him.
Why not?
So just to kind of wrap the movie up without getting into like the nitty gritty of the characters, basically the military guys, they start getting out of hand, threatening to murder people if they don't do exactly what they're told to do. So there's sort of the military people versus the scientists. One of the guys ends up letting in a huge horde of zombies towards the end of it, which they end up tearing apart all the military people.
Was that his name?
Honestly, I don't remember because they were so racist. They just kept calling him Spick. I honestly don't remember
true.
His name.
Yeah.
DJ Elzebub, can we bleep that?
Yeah. Hey, not a word that I use, but it is a word
that
they use in the movie.
Quote. We're doing air quotes. You can't see the air quotes, but they're there.
Yes. I love people of all races. Fact.
I hated that part. Sorry, continue.
The military people get torn up.
One by one.
Yeah, and then there's the whirly bird pilot, the chick, and then one other
guy. The radio guy.
They escape on the helicopter, and they wind up on an island.
On an island fishing.
Yeah.
With some wild pine,
which was mentioned
pine trees.
Earlier in the movie. Yeah. And I was saying earlier, I think that was supposed to be, if it wasn't filmed there, it was supposed to be Sanibel Island, which is off of Fort Myers.
Oh.
And it's actually a pretty solid choice because it's basically rich people's houses and that's it. And you could pretty easily, I mean,
Richmond
for
Island.
These guys, they could probably pretty easily kill, I don't know, a half dozen, you know, rich people.
Zombies, yeah.
And then just live the rest of their lives in luxury.
So, yeah. So, the bad guys got what was coming to them.
Yeah.
One of them got shot by a zombie.
Yeah. Which I appreciated.
Nah.
Well, anyways, I think you could probably guess by now who likes it and who doesn't. But let's get into, like, our ratings and final words on it. Rickety, out of 5, what do you think?
This one's tough. I'm going to give it 2 stars. I would have liked it a lot more if they embraced the campiness of it, maybe, and gave us some jokes, or at least tried for jokes. But everyone played it so serious, so over the top. We were laughing at it the whole time, but I couldn't tell if we were supposed to.
I don't think we were.
The zombie kills, like I said before, were great. And I think I've adapted this appreciation after having a steady diet of horror films over the last year or so. But the zombie kills were a lot of fun. I'll give it that. I mean, in my opinion, they put Walking Dead to shame just because they embraced the whole tearing apart bodies like tissue paper.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not realistic. But fuck it, who cares? You know, it's
zombie.
So that part was a lot of fun. In my opinion, if you're a fan of that stuff, it's even worth sticking around for because it's a lot of fun. But It's very base in the characters. You got your good guys and your bad guys right out the gate. You know what sides are on. You pretty much see it coming. You know, you pretty much can call who's going to live at least 50-50 and who's going to die because they're setting up that the whole time. The whole science-y zombie investigative... I've had some whiskey. The whole investigative part of the zombie stuff with Bub and, you know, that I didn't care for. I don't care. You know, it's who cares? It's zombies, you know? That's not really what I'm here for. But I haven't seen the rest of the movies, to be fair. I don't know if I've seen any of the originals, so I don't have a full grasp of what they were going for like y'all do. So maybe I don't have a full appreciation from that point of view. But it's a 2-star. I recommend it to people who like zombie movies. There's a lot of you out there nowadays. It's a saturated genre, but it's definitely, I see where it all comes from. This is like Walking Dead, the original. You know, I can see where Walking Dead ripped this off completely. I mean, even from the Winnebago, you know, zombie survival stuff from season 1 to, you know, two good guys, bad guys, you know. So 2 stars, I do recommend to your typical horror fan. I, you know, could have missed the first half of the movie and been completely fine. But, you know, I recognize what it brought to the table. So 2 stars recommend from Rickety.
All right. Brandy, how do you feel?
Let me start off by calling out one of the finer zombie kills I've ever seen,
ooh,
which happened in this movie. Towards the end, one of the more nameless evil military men starts getting his, like, pulled apart by a horde. His head starts getting pulled off, and he is screaming. And as the head starts popping off of its hinges, it goes, ah! It starts, like, going higher and higher pitched until it just completely stops. And it was awesome. The first time I saw that, I was like, oh, shit. That really fucking impacted me a lot. And I think that might be one of my favorite zombie kills of all time, period.
It's actually, like, shocking when you hear it. You're like, what the hell is happening? Which is super rare, especially for people of our generation, because we're so inundated with fucking zombies, mm-hmm, to be shocked by a zombie kill. But
it was, I mean, the Foley artistry in that was great. So I'll call that out a little bit too. Anyway, I just wanted to put that out there before my review. Basic, I think I give it a 3. I like this movie on a lot of levels, but it is extremely, like, flawed. It's extraordinarily goofy. It doesn't have a lot of levity, which isn't necessarily a flaw. I think Like, if they had had just a little bit of, like, a few jokes or whatever, I think it would have been actually maybe worse than if they had just gone, like, with a lot of humor, like the previous one. But in, like, the fact that they took everything fully seriously, I think, like, it made me buy in a little bit more than I would have if they were, like, did a little bit of wink into the camera bullshit, which, you know, I don't know that I would have loved just a little bit. It would have had to have been a substantial amount to really make it a different tone. Anyway, I think the acting is overblown. The accent on that fucking pilot is absurd. And I don't think that man has ever seen an island. but I think it's an interesting enough installment. It's certainly like as a trilogy, the three of these, including this one, are responsible for pretty much every major zombie trope you can think of. And this movie is on its own no different. Like, there's a bunch, like that getting pulled apart at the seams, that didn't really happen in the other ones, not to the same extent. So, like, I think this movie set the bar for the gore in zombie movies, whereas the previous two sort of set, you know, sort of ideas of commentary and ideas of just survival tactics and interpersonal arguing and things like that. But this movie does have a long fucking period of time where nobody's really in that much danger. Like, and there's not a whole lot at stake except for the arguing. You don't really know what's at stake because even your main character, the woman doctor, she doesn't even really know. She's questioning it the whole time. And the whole time you're basically like, everybody needs to get the fuck out of there. If good guys, leave. Just leave. You don't need these guys. They don't want you there. Get the fuck out.
You have the fucking helicopter.
Yeah, you have the helicopter. And these guys have threatened to kill you. Just leave. And I mean, I don't know. I just think it's kind of a flawed movie in a lot of ways. But damn, I do kind of like it. So I give it a 3.
Right? I felt like I should have given it less, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to put into words. Like, I really enjoyed watching this both times, but like from a strictly unbiased viewpoint, there's a lot to talk about in terms of flaws. That's kind of what I'm struggling
You're
with.
Right.
All right, Staines, how do you feel?
I'm going to give it a 2 as well. Some of the things that have not been mentioned yet, as far as flaws go, what I didn't like about it was the soundtrack was ridiculous. It was kind of like a typical weird 80s kind of soundtrack, but at times it was just like zany. Like, they'd have these like in between scene like soundtrack. Like, it was wonky. It didn't add anything to the movie. It was like kind of distracting most of the time. And the characterization was just over the top on almost every single person that was speaking, especially like the military guys. Like, one of the first scenes we see with the military guys was just like so shocking to me. I was like, what kind of movie is this? Because they're just like laughing hysterically and saying like the most ridiculous things, like not anywhere close to any type of real person I've ever seen or met before. And I was just like, I don't get what this tone is going. That like really threw me for a loop, and just kind of continued the whole movie. I just didn't understand what they were going for with that aspect. But one of the strengths I did like that hasn't been mentioned though is there were two like kind of speeches given from two different characters that kind of had two different viewpoints that were both really like greatly delivered and written. And one was from the Dr. Frankenstein, is from a very scientific kind of portion, like really like breaking down like the zombies and what they thought and how they reacted and how they function like on a physical level. And then one was from the Jamaican guy talking about how like that, like it was a curse from God and how they needed to move on and how they were too focused on these zombies as previous people and they needed to kind of go live their lives. And I kind of like, those are like the two strongest points of the movie for me. And I kind of like how they mirrored each other in just like a different kind of way. So, but yeah, 2 stars, as I said before, I don't really recommend this movie on its own, but I'm sure it's much stronger as a full piece. So it's just not a great movie by itself. So 2 stars.
All right. I'm going to give this a 4. I chose this movie, so obviously I like it. Pretty much for the most part of what you guys said, I mean, I can't really argue it. As far as the soundtrack goes, I didn't really like it upon my first watch either. And I did a little bit of research, and from what I found, the guy, I can't remember his name, but the guy who actually scored the movie, he intentionally wanted it to have some sort of like island calypso-y feel to it because it was supposed to be taking place in Florida. And it was supposed to mainly be outside, which, you know, they didn't have the budget for.
Yeah.
I think it probably would have fit that better. But kind of putting it in that context, listening to it, I get where he was coming from, and it made me appreciate it a little bit more. Also, as far as like the special effects go, they're fantastic. Yeah. I mean, Savini himself like cites this movie as his magnum opus. That's kind of what puts the movie over the edge for me. If the special effects were like kind of half baked, it wouldn't pack the punch that it does. Like Andy mentioned, when the guy's vocal cords are being like ripped apart and they're going higher and higher, it's a gut punch. And then again, when there's another pretty gruesome kill, Captain Rhodes, he gets shot by Bub, which, you know, that may or may not be something that you appreciate, but I appreciated it. And then after that, he gets torn apart by a horde of zombies. And as they're eating him alive, he's telling them to choke on him, like referring his to intestines. His guts.
Oh, God. Yeah. They're dragging away his legs. Yeah. He's telling them to choke on him.
Yeah. But I mean, obviously it's absurd, but it's still like, it's a gut punch. I don't know. It affected me in a way that like 99% of zombie stuff that I've seen absolutely doesn't. It's probably because, like I said, we're so inundated with the shit. I think that's a large reason why I like this movie, is because it is like a refreshing take on zombies, which is hard to come by, because we see it all the fucking time. But I think Romero has sort of done it again and again, and that's really why I like this movie. Go ahead.
Maybe some of the like reason that the gore seems so impactful is because this movie is so goofy on a lot of levels.
Could be.
Maybe that just, it's so jarring. Because in the other two movies, like I said, there wasn't this level of gore happening. So, and they were also very goofy in a lot of ways. So, I don't know. Maybe that has something to do with it. It's almost like
a juxtaposition kind of thing?
I don't know. Not even a juxtaposition, because it's supposed to. It's kind of going in the natural direction it should go, but they had never gotten there before in the previous two movies. This one just really like swung for the fences with that element, and because the rest of it didn't really swing for the fences. So it's kind of like, it's a little bit of a disconnect almost.
Yeah.
But it the jarring nature of jumping between those, maybe that's part of it.
That makes sense.
One thing Justin mentioned about the sanity aspect, I think a lot of those guys were supposed to be a bit nutso because they've been trapped underground for a long period of time. Coupled with being shitty human beings, I think that's what turned them into laughing, raving lunatics, essentially. I mean, they probably were already not good people to begin with, but they mention being trapped underground at some point, but that's just a semi-explanation for that. But the dude who goes insane, who sacrifices himself to bring all the zombies downstairs, I did not buy into that. That was ludicrous. And now, it was a storytelling filmmaker's reason to bring all those fucking zombies downstairs to kill everyone. I get that. But I didn't buy the, you know, he snapped because of all the pressure.
That guy sucked.
They had his arm cut off because it was bit, and then all of a sudden he decides to kill himself and get everybody else killed in the process in an intricate, engineered way.
Yeah.
You know, how he ripped the guts of the door out and everything.
Yeah, he had the foresight to do that.
Yeah, why?
But he's not, like, he's so crazy. Like, yeah, that didn't make a lot of sense. He should be in shock and in bed. Anyway, one thing before going on.
Yep.
It's a crime on the scale of the fucking Watergate scandal that John Goodman didn't play the character of Steele in this movie.
I concur.
He looked exactly the same. Pretty but much only like with the hat Walter and the glasses. Hotchick.
I was thinking more Jesse Ventura, but
I could see that too. I could see that too. the two of them, my God. Anyway, sorry.
So that puts our aggregate for this movie at a 2.75. So we're fairly split, which seems to be the case for the most people when it comes to this particular movie. But at this point, let's go ahead and get into our Rotten Tomatoes segment.
Certified fresh to death.
So at this point in the show, we're going to go ahead and take turns guessing what the Rotten Tomatoes score is for this movie. First, we're going to go with the critics, and then we're going to go with the users. So, Randy, what do you think the critics rated this?
Oh, God. That's a tough one. I think probably 72.
Ooh. Stains?
56.
I think I'm going to go 80.
Wait, who's running this?
Oh, you.
Okay. Well, the correct score is 82.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
I definitely thought I was shooting high.
Wow. Me too, buddy.
Now, there's only 35 critics. Okay. So.
And it is an older film. So.
True.
Yeah. I usually come back to catch those, of course. Mm.
But still. I mean, yeah. 82 okay. is respectable.
Yeah. Randy, what do you think the people thought of this?
The people.
The users. Fucking say the users, Bob. If you're going to run it, say the users.
The users.
For you. And tell the people who we fight for.
We fight for the users.
Oh, thank God. Speak to the nerds out there, Bob. Speak to them.
Randy?
I would say 80. Sounds great.
Stains?
45.
I'm going to go 65.
It's 75.
What?
Not a huge delta there.
Yeah.
This movie has a huge cult following. So.
Yeah.
And cult followings require you nerds out there who are going to review shit on Rotten Tomatoes. God bless you.
The movie info is flesh-eating zombies close in on a handful of soldiers and scientists holed up in an underground bunker. Final chapter of Romero's trilogy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like
three more movies.
These are facts about the movie.
Runtime 96 minutes on DVD, November 10th, 1998.
The cut we watched, I think, was 101 minutes. Fuck you, IMDb.
Oh, man.
Okay, let's go ahead and get into some trivia.
It's totally time for trivia.
All right, so I did this really swiftly, so forgive me. But there's a couple of things. First, apparently, I'm going to read this directly as I read it from IMDb because I'm not sure I understood it the first time perfectly. Both actors playing Captain Rhodes, which is the main villain, in the two versions of Day of the Dead also appeared in both versions of Dawn of the Dead as police officers. In Dawn of the Dead 78, Joseph Pilato played an officer at the police dock asking for cigarettes before playing Rhodes in the original Day of the Dead. So he was in the original as well as Day of the Dead. And then in Dawn of the Dead, the remake, the Zack Snyder film, Ving Rhames played Kenneth, the cop. And apparently there was a Day of the Dead remake as well in 2008, and he played Rhodes. I have not seen that
apparently
remake.
The Day of the Dead remake is really shitty. So yeah. That's why they're currently remaking it again.
Jesus
well,
Christ.
God bless America. All right, let's see. There's all of the extras, all of the zombies in this movie were basically just people off the streets of Pittsburgh. They were like, hey, you want to be in a movie? And they just, yeah, okay. And they apparently in return they got, says all the extras who portrayed zombies in the climax received for their services, one, a cap that says, I played a zombie in Day of the Dead. Two, a copy of the newspaper from the beginning of the film, the one that says The Dead Walk, and then $1. Just as a fuck you, I guess. I don't understand that.
For the vending machine on your way out.
Yeah. Get the fuck out of here.
Some Doritos, huh?
And this last one is
a
more...
Sprite.
Yeah, I guess this isn't the last one, actually. George Romero apparently says that this is his favorite of his dead movies also, which wow. I thought was pretty interesting. Mm. Let's see. This movie, okay, this is interesting to me because I've been to Fort Myers multiple times to visit people. But the whole like scene at the beginning, that was filmed in Fort Myers, and some of the landmarks are of that town are in it. It's not a very big town, but it's where Thomas Edison was born, I think, or lived or something. So there's a lot of Edison stuff, including the Edison Theater, which you saw in the beginning and all this stuff. Like the ticket taker came out as a zombie and all that shit. That was all in Fort Myers, Florida and Sanibel Island area. But the rest of it was filmed in fucking Pittsburgh, man. It's Pittsburgh again. Let's see, anything else? Oh, this is interesting. The first attempt to shoot the scene where Sarah performs surgery on Miguel's arm, where she chops it, it failed when it simply bounced off the rubber arm. So Tom Savini remade it in wax, and it worked perfectly.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Nice job, Tom. You're one of the greats. That's all I have, really.
All right.
I'm sure there's better trivia out there somewhere, but I don't know it, so...
One thing that I could add, just I watched like the commentary on this, and I think there's like two primary scenes where they've got some actors with guts that just fall out of their stomach. And I know in those two scenes specifically, they use real pig's intestines. And I guess they had some sort of issue with their refrigerator or their freezer. So it was not chilled. So the guts were rotting when they used them. So people were ill. Having to smell it. So that's some real horror for you.
Ew.
Well, let's go ahead and get into some news.
Extra, extra. Read all about it.
Thank you, DJ Elzebub, the Demon DJ. You get them here every week on Straight Chilling on the Ones and the Twos. First thing I wanted to talk about, I showed you guys a trailer right before we started. It is for the new Rob Zombie film called 31. I think it's out this September, if I believe.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Master of Horror, Rob Zombie?
The one, the only.
Self-proclaimed.
So claims his own trailer.
I guarantee you. Hey, tell him I'm Master of Horror.
Make sure you put Master of Horror.
Make sure you got to put this on.
He really does.
Put that up there, dude.
You know, I made The Devil's Fucking Rejects, right?
Oh, my God.
Master.
Starring his wife, of course. Surprise, surprise.
Who is probably a lovely lady, but I don't know that she's an actress.
Not a talented one. And not one that's willing to work on her art form, apparently.
In fairness, when has horror ever had talented actors?
I guess.
It can happen.
It can happen.
On occasion.
Especially, but if you're saying you're the master of horror, you really should back that
master.
Up more master. Than your wife acting in it.
I agree. So, this particular trailer, what did you guys think about it?
I think it looked more like Rob Zombie's typical bullshit. Honestly, yeah. I'm not a fan of Rob Zombie's horror, and aside from like the Halloweens. Like the Salem and the Devil's Rejects and like it's just got this feel, this like grimy Western kind of, you know, he's always got that. I don't know. It's just not ever shot well. And like the writing and the acting, it's just on this level that like there are several of his films that I've started that I just can't finish. I just don't care to finish, which like hardly ever happens for me. I never just like. Start a horror film and just don't finish it. But almost every single Rob Zombie's films I have started and stopped watching just because it's just bullshit most of the time. In my opinion, I just see it as just this ridiculous.
I understand.
Just Rob Zombie just jerking off on
this
film.
This is Hot Topic horror. This is not real. Like, this is not real in any sense of the word. This is like... This is like an almost like a new, I guess it is kind of horror because it is a new form of cash grabbing that the likes of which few have accomplished because it's strictly feeding off of disenfranchised middle schoolers. I don't understand who else would enjoy this movie. It's or who would just enjoy his other movies that I've seen. But this one looks like no different.
And specifically, this one was crowdfunded too.
Oh my God. So this is like
people paid to.
It's designed for masters of horror. You wouldn't understand.
We're not the audience. Obviously.
Horror.
This is for real horror fans.
I actually hate
the kind
horror movies.
That wear Marilyn Manson T-shirts.
Whoa. Don't bring Marilyn into this. Come on now. Let's keep it civil.
Sweet dreams are made of these.
I kind of disagree with part of what you said, Justin. I think a lot of the stuff that he's made like is shot well. Like it looks pleasing to the eye.
It's edited
harshly.
I can't.
In my opinion.
And yeah.
Especially Devil's Rejects. Like.
Yeah, I hate Devil's Rejects. But the dialogue is dog shit. It's like a 13-year-old wrote this shit. It's terrible, and it's always terrible, and Rob Zombie writes all of his own movies, and he directs all of his own movies. I think he's probably like a decent director, but that man can't write to save his fucking life.
It reminds me of, this is a little grim, actually, but there was a few years back, Virginia Tech, I think, the guy who, like, chopped somebody's head off in the quad, that guy was a writer, and I read some of his writing. Part of why he was, like, angry was because people didn't like his writing, and nobody understood him, and his writing was like this, like the writing in this movie. It was fucking awful, like, childish bullshit, like, And the cop was like, "You got to do what I say," and I was like, "I don't understand." Like this, like the most infantile bullshit. Like I just don't understand.
I don't get it either. I hope this is a cool movie. It basically looks like The Hunger Games if Rob Zombie made it. I don't know.
Kind of looks sold. Like a Saw, a weak Saw movie, kind of. They're like trapped in a house. They kidnap people and they survive in this house, but they're chasing after them with chainsaws.
Isn't there another movie that's Becky was telling me that she watched a movie that's similar where it's like there like 30 people stuck in a room, but only one is going to survive, can walk out. It has to be just like whittled down to one person. I wasn't sure if it was this movie or not. Obviously, she saw that one, so that can't be right.
From what they portrayed, like it didn't even seem like there was any kind of like wit or skill involved. There's like, can you survive us chasing you around with chainsaws in this house that we built? I mean, I don't know.
Don't get murdered.
It doesn't even seem like a good premise.
No.
Nah.
Weak. Anyway.
More headlines?
Yes, absolutely. Let's keep cruising. So the next thing I have... is regarding an Eli Roth, Jim Carrey duo.
What the hell is happening?
Let me explain. So there's a comic book, I've never read it, but it's like a short run. I think it's only 3 issues or so, but it's called Alistair Arcane, which they're now going to make into a movie. Eli Roth is directing and Jim Carrey is producing and starring in it. The story actually sounds pretty interesting, even though that duo sounds really bizarre, but basically what it is there's a like a horror host, a late night horror TV host, that will be played by Jim Carrey, and he has like these skits that he does in between the movies that he introduces, and I guess they tend to be pretty gory. I think he like chops his hand off in one of them, etc., etc. And some kids watch his show, and I guess they're moved to try and replicate what he does, except they actually do it, and I think they end up killing themselves, so he gets fired from his job, and he's an older fellow, and that kind of puts him in this depression that leads to an early death for him. But before he dies, he ends up laying a curse on the town, and I guess he like comes back and haunts it, and crazy shit ensues from there. So it sounds like an intriguing plot, and it could be done well, but how do you guys feel about it?
It's interesting that Jim Carrey's getting involved with something like that, because I remember like right after Kick-Ass 2 was like finished, like he, after he had starred in it, was like totally bashing it because he's like, it's so violent and everything like that. But he played this. Oh, the gun.
It was right after that Kindergarten.
I gotcha. Yeah. Okay. That makes a little more sense. I couldn't remember it. Gotcha.
Right post Sandy.
Okay. Never mind then. I don't know what Jim Carrey's doing then.
Jim Carrey. I don't know why. Why? Why would he do that?
What was his last movie? Like Penguins? Poppers?
Dumb and Dumber.
The last movie he did that was horror-ish was The Number 23, which I don't know if you guys have seen it.
Yeah, we saw it.
But it is dog shit.
Yeah.
Pretty bad.
Saw it in theaters. I think we saw it together.
Dog shit.
He's actually doing, before that movie, he's doing another horror movie that I'm also pretty intrigued by. It's the director, Lily Marie Amanpour, I think is her name. She did the Girl Walks Home Alone at Night that I really liked. But this next movie she's doing, it's starring Jim Carrey and Keanu Reeves.
Whoa.
And the I forget the guy's name from Game of Thrones, Khal Drogo, that actor.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to be the three main guys in it. And
Jason Momoa.
Is it a buddy comedy?
No. It's like a cannibal movie.
Wow.
So.
That's interesting.
Oh, my God.
I don't know how that's going to work out either.
I'm all for any new product to come out of Hollywood, so go for it. But
yeah.
I am questionable at that. I would have to see.
I like the idea.
As
far as this movie goes, I hate Eli Roth.
Yeah.
I don't have much faith in him. I think Jim Carrey could pull this off, but I don't like Eli Roth's stuff.
I really want Jim Carrey to succeed forever because he's such a likable person. But I don't like Eli Roth even the slightest bit.
Jim Carrey, he's like the last of the slapstick. You know,
yeah.
Slapstick is almost dead. I mean, but he's truly physical. You know, I would love to see that. I would be interested to see that combination. Seeing him as a raving, murderous, bloody lunatic, but also fucking hilarious.
I don't know if
could
I could
be interesting.
Seriously.
I'm interested.
It's funny.
Yeah. I'm intrigued that he has signed on to do two horror films. So yeah. That's like, cool.
I mean, he's trying stuff. Yeah. I wish that it was with better with directors with better pedigree. Well, I guess Amapur.
Yeah.
In her case, it's a pretty good pedigree, but Eli Roth is not.
Yeah.
In my mind.
Sorry, Eli. Yeah. Just act in Tarantino movies. That was fine. You did that fine.
There you go.
When did he do that?
Do some more of that. Bastards. He was the bear Jew.
Bear
and Bastards.
With the baseball.
Eli.
I was thinking Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Yeah, do that
Mike
too.
Mike Myers was in that movie. Weirdly,
do that
but
too.
Not him.
Sorry. Anyways, the last thing I had is just some stuff that's coming up on Netflix in July that is pretty interesting. There's kind of a decent list of horror stuff coming out. July 1st, you got Big Trouble in Little China, if you've never seen that. Blade 2. July 8th, The Invitation, which I definitely recommend. I just watched that on Amazon.
Do that.
July 15th, there's going to be this thing called Ghost Heads, which I guess is going to be some sort of documentary about people who are obsessed with the Ghostbusters movies, which I think that's the exact same day the Ghostbusters reboot comes out too. If you're into that.
What a quinky dink.
Ghost Heads. I'm a big ghost head.
Also, July 15th, Holidays, which is the anthology film where each installment is based on a separate holiday. And like Kevin Smith does one, and then I can't remember who else is on it. But I definitely plan to watch that. And then the Stranger Things season one, which is a Netflix original, also hits July 15th. Which has Winona Ryder in it, which I forgot to mention last time. But watch the trailer on that. It looks pretty sweet.
Also, Preacher got renewed for season 2, just notified.
Cool.
So I am excited. Hopefully one day you guys will.
Breaking news. I definitely want to watch that at some point. So that pretty much takes care of it for this episode of Straight Chillin'. Next week, we're going to be back in the movie theater. We're going to watch The Purge Election Year. But until then, you can keep up with us on iTunes. You can rate, review, and subscribe to us. Please let us know how we're doing. You can follow us on Stitcher Radio as well, or on our Facebook page. Just search Straight Chilling. We're on Twitter, str8_chilling, and we're on Instagram, straight_chilling_podcast. Until next week, keep chilling.